Hi, everyone. Welcome to the April Nonfiction Writers University event, another new opportunity to learn to successfully write and publish nonfiction and make a living as a writer. I'm Nina Amir, the Inspiration to Creation Coach and founder of the Nonfiction Writers University. I work with nonfiction writers as an author, coach, and trainer, and certified high-performance coach. I'm really excited about our topic today, which is staying persistent on the path to writing success. And I'm going to be interviewing my colleague and friend, Jordan Rosenfeld. I want to just do a little bit of housekeeping before we go into that. Everyone is on Q&A mode. We will be doing question and answer at the end of my interview after I finish asking Jordan questions. And in order to participate in that, you just hit *6 and that will raise your hand and we'll answer all questions at the end. So just hit *6 and that will queue you up. And I will remind you of that later, and you're welcome to do that at any point or to write down your questions so that you have them for later. So to be a successful writer in this modern, fast-paced, digital age takes more creative strategies and persistence than ever before. It's so easy to get frustrated, feel uncreative or blocked, and to move into overwhelm, and none of that is going to help you move towards successful authorship. But you can successfully develop your career and stay excited and passionate about the process, as well as enthusiastic about what you're doing. You also can move out of nonfiction and create a cross-genre career in fiction and journalism as well. And we often talk about journalism, but not so much about fiction. But I know some of you would like to be working in both fiction and nonfiction. So doing that, all of this, it may sound like an unattainable dream, but it's really not. And Jordan Rosenfeld can tell you all about how it isn't, because this is the life she lives. So during this event, Jordan's going to teach you why connecting with your inner purpose is crucial, how to carve away distractions from writing time, how to step outside your comfort zone for growth, how to avoid discouragement and find new opportunities, and much more. Let me tell you a bit about Jordan, who, as I said, is both a friend and a colleague, but she's a very accomplished writer. Jordan is the author of the suspense novels Women in Red, Forged in Grace, and Night Oracle, as well as the writing guides Writing Deep Scenes, Plotting Your Story Through Action, Emotion, and Theme, A Writer's Guide to Persistence, How to Create a Lasting and Productive Writing Practice, Making a Scene, Crafting a Powerful Story One Scene at a Time, and with her co-author Rebecca Lawton, Write Free, Attracting the Creative Life, which is soon to have its second edition. Jordan's freelance work has been published in such places as The Atlantic, Eating Well, The New York Times, New York Magazine, Scientific American, The Washington Post, Writer's Digest Magazine, and many more. She holds an MFA in Creative Writing and Literature from Bennington Writing Seminars and a BA in Liberal Studies from the Hutchins School. She created and hosted the literary radio program Word by Word, Conversations with Writers, on KRCB Radio, interviewing well-known writers such as T.C. Boyle, Louis Erdrich, and others. And the show won an NEA Chairman's Grant in 2004. So with all that said, I would love to welcome Jordan to this month's Nonfiction Writers University event. Welcome, Jordan.
Thank you so much, Nina. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, well, I'm thrilled to have you. It's always great to talk to you. I forgot to mention, Jordan, if you want to, while we're talking, check Jordan out. You can go to her website. It's Jordan Rosenfeld, RosenFeld.net, JordanRosenfeld.net. Sorry about that. Wanted to make sure that they had that, Jordan.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you.
All right, so welcome again, and are you ready to just dive in?
I am.
Awesome. All right, so everybody always likes to know how people get their start. So can you just give us a little rundown on how you got started as a writer?
Absolutely. Well, and I will say that I'm one of those writers who was writing all my life, you know, since a child, filled hundreds of journals, and I always knew that I wanted to make writing a career. It really wasn't until college that I realized that there are a lot of opportunities for me to get my name out there that weren't necessarily paying opportunities at that time. Of course, I was young then, so money was not my primary drive, but I started taking advantage of things like newsletters that people needed help with, even my community college where I worked. My local newspaper ended up being my first real start, and I had built some of these clips through volunteer opportunities where I'd written for this friend's publication or that person's newsletter. And so my local newspaper took a chance on me and started assigning me little features on things like the local garden society and, you know, the fellow in town who collected antique spoons, things like that, that were really local and really fun, but they were also paid opportunities. And I am deeply grateful to them for giving me that chance because it really did begin my career. But I also know that if I hadn't invested in those volunteer opportunities, I wouldn't have had the clips, which is, of course, the term for articles or writing that you've done that shows someone what you're capable of doing. So that's pretty much where I got my start.
Awesome. You know, it's interesting because you and I don't think we've ever talked about that, but my start was quite similar because I also mm-hmm. was journaling and writing little stories about horses when I was young. And mm-hmm. and then in high school, I restarted the defunct school newspaper, and from there was recommended to the local, like, our town newspaper, and wrote mm-hmm. for them on a biweekly column, like a school news column. And from there, exactly. I went on to write for the larger local paper and doing features. And so that really was where exactly. I got my first clips and my writing start as well. So pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah. So you began as a journalist. How did you move into fiction and, you know, so writing novels and writing nonfiction mm-hmm. books? And why?
Well, it's funny
because
I would actually say I started as a fiction writer first. It's just that it wasn't something anyone was paying me money to do. I was writing fiction from the age of 8, and I did actually start submitting stories to publications before I became a journalist. So I should say that maybe they were almost happening at the same time. So I did start to receive some small publications for my short stories at the time. So I would say fiction is like the undercurrent in my life that has always been present, but it wasn't until I was, you know, past college age or around then that I started to take myself seriously. And I really became clear to me that anything you want to do seriously, if you keep putting it off, it's never going to happen. So novels don't write themselves, et cetera. So I would do word count goals and set a goal to finish a novel. So I finished my first novel right out of college. It never went anywhere. But then I took it on myself to write another one, and I was actually able to get an agent for that novel. So again, the funny thing is that none of my novels have been published with the help of an agent. So I've published in a couple of different variations on a theme. I've done self-publishing, and I've done hybrid publishing. That was all happening at the same time as my journalism career was burgeoning. But for me, I would say that the two inform each other in different ways. I'm trying to think if I'm answering the question you asked. The question was, how did I move from fiction to nonfiction? Is that right?
Yeah, and why? Yeah.
Yeah, and why? And I think ultimately it became clear to me that fiction is something I love to do, but it's not necessarily going to bring home a fast paycheck. It's not going to be easy to support yourself right away. Whereas journalism is something that you can make a living at. And yes, again, it takes time, but you can, you know, there's nothing like writing 500 to 1,000 words and getting a paycheck within a couple of weeks. You know, you're not going to see that for a novel. So for me, the novel is like the marathon, and the journalism is like the, you know, the sprint.
Right. So again, this, you know, I can't believe we've never talked about all these things before. But I actually wanted to be a novelist, and mm-hmm. my mother, in her practicality, said, you know, only really good writers can make a living as novelists. Mm. And so I went on to, but I knew I wanted to be a writer. And so I took a class in journalism in high school and then went to college and got a degree in magazine journalism because to me, while journalism wasn't super highly paid, I could eke out a living that way
yeah.
as a writer. So, you know, very similar.
It is similar.
Although I have not pursued my fiction as much. I do have one novel there, but nonfiction has really become my love. You mentioned one thing I wanted to backtrack to. You said that you got an agent for that second novel, but you never had an agent sell one of your mm-hmm. books. So mm-hmm. can you just clarify that for
yeah.
us?
Well, so my first agent was, he'd been in the business a long time, and in the time that I signed with him, I think it was like 2000, 2001, fiction was not doing very well. And this was kind of the beginning of the nonfiction boom. Mm-hmm. And so he, within the first 6 months of being represented by him, he had sent my book out to just a handful of publishers, and then he decided he was getting out of the fiction business. So I was a casualty of that decision. So then my second agent was very exciting. She was the same agent who represents best-selling author Gillian Flynn. She loved my book. We put it through a revision. She sent it to all the publishers in New York, so to speak. And it was just, at the time, they felt it was too cross-genre. I was writing in an area that hadn't quite hit popularity, but would go on to in a few years after it had seen every editor in New York. And so they kept saying things like, we really love this, but we don't know how we'd sell it. We don't know what genre it is, what niche it would fit. And so, again, I was a casualty of bad timing, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. So what I ended up doing years later after I actually put that book aside. I had written another. And a friend of mine and I decided to start a kind of a collective for independent writers that would basically act like a small press. So we would all be independent writers, but we each brought with us different talents, like cover design and copyright editing. And so what we would do is trade our services amongst ourselves and produce our books and sort of look like a collective and take advantage of collective marketing, et cetera. So that's how I published my first novel, which I had professionally edited and everything. And again, agents were really kind, but they didn't take it on. It was just, I think I got impatient, and I published it through our collective. And I have to say, though, that was a really good choice because it did end up selling a decent amount of books. It opened a lot of doors for me. And so despite it being self-published at the time, which at that time I felt very uncertain about, it ended up being a really positive experience. So since then, it's just, I have to say, this is a more challenging time to write novels than perhaps ever before. So it's just tough to get an agent, and it's tough to sell fiction.
And so how did you also have an agent for your nonfiction, correct?
No, I've sold all my books myself directly to Writer's Digest.
Okay, awesome. So mm-hmm. I might come back to that in a little bit. So this crossing genres, I mean, it seems to have had an effect on your fiction in that, in some cases it was a little harder to sell. But that's, sort of crossing fiction genres, right?
Mm-hmm.
How about...
Yeah, that's crossing fiction genres.
Yeah. So how about the crossing genres in general with your writing career? You did say that fiction informs your nonfiction. So how did this cross-genre career of yours affect your writing and your writing career?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think for one thing, the funny thing to me is that my first book published was a book about the writing craft, my book, Make a Scene. So I always felt a little bit funny that I had published a book about writing craft, but no novels. And there's also this sort of stigma that if you haven't published a novel, you must not be a good writer, when most of us who've been in the business a long time can tell you it's just really tough to get fiction published, even the best writers. So for me, publishing a novel was the first step to sort of kind of validating my own, giving myself a sense of validation that I was also a decent teacher of writing craft, which I, has become a big part of my career. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And then also I think for me, the world of journalism is all about interviewing people, getting their stories, talking to people about things, putting yourself in other people's shoes, which is very, very much helpful to the craft of writing fiction. And there's just, for me, there's something about, I feel like the world, and again, this is sort of combating some what I would say preconceived notions people have, that if you're just a novelist, you're not really working, or you don't really work in the world, or you're not really, there's this sort of unnecessary attitude. It's sort of that attitude towards artists in general, like, well, what do you really do? And so I think for me, having a journalism career fulfills not only financial goals, which are very important to my livelihood, but it fulfills a sense of purpose that I, even though I don't agree that writing fiction is not doing anything, it helps me feel more competent in the world. And it also kind of, helps for me to prove to other people that writers are immensely, versatile. I think versatility is really crucial in any writing career. And I think that also writing fiction teaches you something and does something for your sort of inner writing process that journalism alone cannot. There is something powerful about the practice of writing fiction, which is, it is an art. It is, it requires you to go to deeper places in yourself. So in that way, I think they inform each other both on the process level, and I think they're also helpful to kind of round out your toolbox, so to speak, as a writer, as a working writer in the world. Plus, who doesn't like reading fiction, you know? Like how often you meet people at a journalism function or even interviewing people and you let them know you've got a book, a novel. It's a great way to sell novels.
Right, right, for sure. Well, and I also often talk about marketing fiction, that if novelists can actually move into nonfiction and become an expert in a topic that's covered in their fiction, they can then speak as experts and sell their novels at the back of the room because there are way more opportunities for nonfiction writers to speak than fiction writers.
I think that's a brilliant piece of advice, personally. And
especially
if you have a historical fiction sort of element or something that's based in reality, it is very true.
Yeah. So, okay, so you've told us a little bit about how you got started and why you, you know, sort of why you got started writing for publication. How did you make a decision at some point that you were going to really focus on the journalism side? And then in addition to that, how much time and income, you don't have to give us numbers, but, you know, come from the journalism as opposed to the books?
Yeah. Well, I would say that I'm 100% full-time freelance journalist at this point in my life. I carve out time for writing both craft-related books and fiction, but fiction is definitely taken more of a back seat, which is not my favorite thing at this moment in time. Part of that, I think, is because I have a young child. So for people who are listening who are perhaps not, you know, in that same position, you have more time than you think. I made the transition. So I actually left my last day job where I worked for someone else back in, I think it was like 2001, 2002, something like that. I was working as a communications director for a nonprofit. And I went full-time freelance. I had been freelancing on the side for some years, so I already had built up some income. And I was also freelance developmental editing, which I still do as well. And so I went full-time at that point, and I did that for years until around 2008 when my novel didn't sell to big publishing. The economy tanked, and then my son was born, all within this short period of time. And then I took a break for a couple of years. And so after that break, you know, my husband was the primary income sort of breadwinner. My son hit kindergarten, and I was just so ready to come back to it all. And so I started working full-time again, freelance. And slowly, you know, I built it up. Over the course of the last 3 years, I've become, and honestly, I've been able to build my freelance career up now in the last 3 years to make more income than I've ever made, not only for working for myself, but at a job. Hmm. So, and I do a variety of things. I write a lot of different things. I edit. I occasionally teach. That's not a big income stream at this moment, but most of my work income is coming directly from writing for publications and magazines and online venues. And it is all of my, you know, I say I work full time and I do, but I don't work a 9-to-5 because I have a son who goes to school and I have to work around his hours. So it's sort of a piecemeal, you know, anyone who works for themselves knows how this goes. You have different times of day that you work and you fit it in. And then of course I still have to make time for family time and things like that. So it's always a little bit of a challenge, but I am proof that you can definitely make a living as a freelance writer.
Awesome. You know. Do you have to write for the bigger publications like New York Times?
New York Times doesn't pay. They pay nothing.
Oh, really?
Here's the secret. The places you think pay a lot of money don't, and vice versa. You know, obviously print magazines do still pay more money than online venues, but there's a lot of different things. I do recommend becoming a Renaissance writer so that you can write about multiple topics, but the big money is actually in things like white papers and content marketing, content writing where a brand sponsors a sort of a subject matter that they have people write articles about and things like that. But I would say I piece it together. So I'll have a couple of what I call anchor clients or anchor employers who they give me regular work every week. And then I have others that I'm just pitching at random. It's a job with a lot of hustle. You really have to be, you can't be complacent. You can't wait for the work to come to you. And you have to stay sharp and on your edge because that's how it works. But there's so much work to be had if you're willing to go after it.
any anchor clients or these corporations, things like that? I mean, is this more corporate writing?
No. Well, no, actually, a couple of publications I write for at this point in time. I do have one that you could sort of call that. They're kind of like writing white papers. Yeah,
right.
But it's not exactly corporate writing, medical writing, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome. All right,
and
thank you.
Yeah, I should say, too, especially as a piece of advice, you're going to write some things you love and you're going to write some things you don't love in order to make a living. In other words, not every subject is going to fascinate you, because that's how it works if you want to make a living as a journalist.
Right. Right. Okay. Awesome. So that's great and very inspiring to know that this can be done and you can make a living
mm-hmm.
at it.
Mm-hmm.
What tips do you have for the nonfiction writers in our university who might want to follow in your footsteps and, you know, be doing, you know, I mean, you do so much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, you're making your living right now as a journalist, but you still have the nonfiction books and you have the novels
mm-hmm.
and you're editing and you're doing so many
mm-hmm.
different things. So, if somebody wanted to follow in your footsteps, make a living as a writer, what are your tips?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you want to start by always looking at everything as a possible opportunity. You know, wherever you go, you know, if you listen to people talk about their needs, writing is one of those things that people need in a lot of capacities. Businesses need it. People, individuals need it. Students need it. Publications need it. So sort of kind of starting to open your mind to the fact that that's something that you could do and offer someone as an opportunity to either make a living at it or at least build clips, especially on that earlier point I was making about volunteering. If you know someone who needs a newsletter written or a press release or something and you can do it to build your name, do it. These are investments in future money, basically. And then think about your personal strengths and interests. And see if you can come up with ideas that would make for good article ideas. You know, in the first year of freelancing, most of what I wrote were actually personal essays, which were really popular for a while, about things that were pertinent to me, and I could find a kind of universal angle on them. And I would pitch them to ideas, parenting ideas, you know, things like that. Or you know, if you're an outdoors person or a hiker or you love dogs, you know, there are also trade magazines for almost anything you can imagine. I also feel like you need to trust that your ideas are good and then jump on them. One of the things that the mistake I made in my sort of first iteration as a freelancer years ago is that I'd have an idea and I'd think, no one will buy that. And then I'd see it, you know, a month, 2 months, 6 months later in some other magazine, someone else wrote it. So, you know, you really maybe keep a notebook with ideas. And when you're getting ready to actually learn how to pitch publications, you know, go through that notebook and then see what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, when it comes to the realm of freelance journalism, be the person who has done your research and is so well educated in terms of what the publication writes about, what they're looking for, how they want your pitch to come to them, and how much research they want you to have done in advance. Because there's nothing really worse, I think, than learning the hard way by having somebody tell you, you know, this pitch is not working for me. You know, obviously don't know what you're talking about. Have you read our magazine? Things like this, we've all heard, those of us who've made these mistakes. And the fact is, like, Google is your friend. It's an amazing tool. If you have a question, there is an answer online, I guarantee it. You know, you can even just Google something like how to get started as a freelancer. It's really, there's an immense amount of information out there, and it's not hard to learn. So I'd say those are my top beginning tips.
Okay, awesome. So before I get into some topics related to the Writer's Guide to Persistence, I just want to forget, because I know somebody out there listening is going to want to know. So you didn't represent yourself. I mean, yeah, you did represent yourself on your books. You didn't have an agent.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
sold all
I,
of
not
them.
Not for my nonfiction books.
Yeah, so you had, so the nonfiction books, you sold them to, you said, Writer's Digest without an agent.
Mm-hmm.
How
mm-hmm.
did you represent yourself? Or what was that like for you?
I have to admit I'm sort of a lone wolf, and so I quite enjoy being the one to take on things myself. I did have, at the time that I first sold Make a Scene, I did have a membership in the Writers Guild, I think it was, which is a union for writers, an online union where you just pay dues based on what you earn, so I didn't earn much at that time, so that they would look over my contract for me. They have lawyers on staff who will do free contract guidance. So I got guidance in that respect, but I did a lot of research, and I, at the time, I didn't want to share my 15% with an agent, since Writer's Digest did not require me to have one. in order to sell my book. And that's what it came down to was when I found out they didn't require an agent, I didn't feel the need to go out and get one for the books. I'm sure there are people, and I'm not entirely convinced myself, who would say it would behoove me to be working with an agent around these books. I can't tell you one way or the other because I've only done it one way. I've always worked directly with the publisher and my editors, and I have found it fairly easy, but I have to say I'm someone who's always done a lot of research about the industry. I know a lot about publishing. I write a lot about publishing. So if I were someone who knew nothing, I think it would be more daunting, and I would absolutely recommend you go through an agent because you don't want to find yourself in a position where you're taken advantage of or where there's something important you need to know that you don't know, and it bites you later on.
Right. Yeah, early on, I pitched to some publishers on my own, and I remember reading a book by a guy named Levin. I can't think of his first name, Be Your Own Literary Agent. And I remember I went through that and really highlighted all the different things he said to look out for. But that book is quite old now. I don't know if there's a new edition. But I then did similar to what you did. I wasn't part of the guild, but I took when I did get a contract, because I did have one contract for a book that, it's a long story, didn't end up getting published, mm-hmm. but I took it to a literary agent and had them look mm-hmm. at it to make sure that everything was kind of copacetic, you know?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's yeah.
No, go ahead. Were you going to say something?
I was just going to say there's plenty of good reasons to work with an agent, and there's also, I just happen to be someone who's often carved out a path that's a little bit around the rules and the guidelines set out for us, and I'm sort of here to say it can work for you, but be mm-hmm. careful too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have no problem with that at all. I mean, most people on the call probably know that I'm a hybrid author. I mean, I did do self-publishing on my own, and then but I was always a holdout for traditional publishing. And so I did go for the agent, and now I have an agent who actually helps me with my self-publishing as well.
Exactly.
So you know, I've been a little bit of a hybrid writer, not necessarily hybrid publishing, but a hybrid writer.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go on to talk about A Writer's Guide to Persistence. I think persistence is so important. I write a lot about tenacity, which is very similar. So mm-hmm. why that book and that topic?
Yeah, so it really came out of a very personal place in my life. You know, I mentioned earlier there was a time when, you know, my novel didn't sell and my son was young, and I went into a little bit of a dark place where I felt like I would never be a success again. You know, why do I bother to write? All of that stuff we go through. And so I started to kind of journal as a way of working my way out of it because I knew that I couldn't stay there. You know, that's not who I am. And part of the question, one of the big questions I asked myself was, you know, if you never had an audience again, would you still write? If you never got paid to write again, would you still write? And the answer was so loud and clear for me. It was yes. And so then I started asking myself, well, why? Why do you write? And so these journal entries became blog entries. It was sort of, I was just blogging, you know, kind of haphazardly at that time. But all of a sudden, I was getting these responses from people saying, you know, I feel the same way. Oh, I needed to hear this. Yeah, there are reasons to write. And we got to get, you know, back on that horse and keep at it. And out of that, I thought, maybe there's a book here. So I pitched this idea based on this sort of several months process of writing and journaling and blogging to Writer's Digest Books, who had published my last book years before. And they went for it. And it's funny because it was right at the time, I think, Nina, you've been a beneficiary of this too, where they've started to open up to books that were a little bit beyond just craft, but more about process and what happens internally and creatively for us as writers.
Right.
And so I think it was just the timing was really good because I think a lot of self-published authors who had started out in that first wave were feeling a little discouraged. I think traditionally published authors were feeling discouraged by the market. And so it kind of hit a nerve with people because it's really all about, you know, all the reasons why we should keep writing regardless and be persistent in our journey regardless of what's happening in the moment, regardless of whether we're meeting success or what we perceive as failure in the moment.
Mm-hmm. And so for those who are listening, can you provide a few ways for them to be more persistent? Because I think that's hard. That's why I talk so much about tenacity. I think it's hard to just keep going when it feels overwhelming, when it feels hard, when you're facing rejection or you've been rejected. So how can they be more persistent so they actually make it to the success they want?
Right. For me, the number one thing, which in some ways might seem the hardest, but really it's so crucial, is really connecting with what it is that makes you happy, brings you joy, meaning, or purpose through writing. And, you know, asking yourself that same question, why do you write? What does it mean to you? Because I find that anything we do in life that is sort of, you know, without joy, without purpose, is ultimately going to feel like a slog. It's going to feel like we're just dragging ourselves through the process. And anything you do from that point of view is like unlikely to be successful. So, you know, if you're someone who finds out, wow, maybe writing isn't that important to me, you know, that's an answer too. But I've rarely found that to be true for the writers I know. It's more like we need permission to look at writing from that pure point of view that has nothing to do with the end goal. You know, and for me, I feel like we, in this culture, you know, I know not everyone on your call may be an American, but we get very caught up in success as it's represented by fame, praise, validation, money, right? Mm-hmm. So anyways, connect with what makes you happy. Carve away distractions in your life that keep you from writing, and I know we may talk about that more. And you might think, well, what are those? But I guarantee you know what those distractions are if you sit down and think about them. Pull away from or put boundaries around what I call toxic relationships with people that don't support your writing, people who see it as a frivolous hobby, who are annoyed by the time you spend writing. They are not people you really want to keep close to you if you can help it. And then also say yes to opportunities that stretch you a little bit and take what I call healthy risks. And I will also talk about that more if we get to that, which means where you take a step that forces you to grow just a little bit, you know, sort of outside of what's comfortable, but it's not going to sabotage you. So mm-hmm. Those are my tips.
Awesome. So you were basically talking about connecting with your inner purpose as part of this whole process of being more persistent. So what is it about connecting with your inner purpose that's so crucial?
Well, I think, you know, in a way I sort of already said this, but it's really important to hear it twice anyways, and that's, you know, everything that's externally validating or rewarding about writing that comes from outside of you is eventually going to dry up and go away. Whether or not, I'm not saying altogether or forever, but, you know, you're going to have a bad week. You're going to get rejections. Your writing's not going to gel. You know, things are not going to come together. And if you only place your sense of purpose on those external validations, then you're going to feel discouraged. Instead, if you can sort of go deep inside yourself and find this well of purpose that comes from you and is like an engine that is always driving you, then you're going to be able to sustain yourself and feel encouraged that, you know, the future is still bright when you get a rejection, when you hear criticism, you know, when that check doesn't come. So it's, you know, and there are many, many ways, and I would never consider myself in a position to tell anyone how to access that particular, you know, purpose, but whether you do it through connecting through nature or writing down, you know, why it matters to you, or you go to your spiritual source, we all have a source of purpose inside ourselves. I believe that. And for a lot of the writers I work with, I find it really comes down to permission, that you allow yourself to do it. You kick out those voices that tell you you can't, shouldn't, will never be a success, blah, blah, blah. And you say, no, this matters to me, so I'm going to claim it. So that's kind of the best nutshell I can give you for why inner purpose is crucial. It's just like anything. If we wait for other people to tell us our worth, we'll never feel worthy. So same goes for your writing.
Right. Well, and you also gave us a few ways to actually to connect with it before we don't feel connected. Okay, so you mentioned distraction. What do you think are the biggest distractions to writing?
Yeah, I will be revealing myself here is what I will be doing. Number one, wasting too much time on social media. Ding, ding, ding. At least the people I know. That's a big one. The other one for writers, particularly journalist friends I know, is researching when you should be writing. So, you know, perhaps you've set aside time to write and instead you go on a research bend. those are all usually just attempts to avoid the writing, sitting down, facing the blank page. Cleaning your house, you know, things like that. The other thing I find is that for a lot of us who have it, particularly let's say you're trying to work on some fiction, but you also are, like me, a freelance journalism, you might lean towards you know, workaholism is a negative sounding word, but you might throw yourself into your paid work because it produces a quick result. And sometimes that's actually a distraction from your writing. So you might be working too much and not carving out that little extra bit of time for your fiction writing, for instance. And then, you know, your entertainment habits for some people, they binge TV shows at a certain time of day. They like to go out and have drinks with their friends every night. I mean, you know, I'm just spitballing here. I can't say what they are for everyone, but definitely the social media, the entertainment, and for me, the sort of workaholism are the big ones.
Yeah. I find email is a really big one for me.
Oh, email.
Really, really big. Like, that's such an easy way for me to procrastinate, which is...
Seriously.
It's a distraction, so I go there.
It's a distraction.
And then I'm lost in it, and if I am procrastinating, if I'm resisting writing, then I will click on that email box I don't know how many times. It's terrible.
It's true. And it's satisfying in an instant way, but then in the long term, you don't feel like you actually did what you set out to do.
Right, for sure. And it's a little bit like that with a lot like that with all of it, with the social media and anything. I mean, distraction could be the laundry. It could be, you know, the dog, your kid. It could be almost anything.
It is. And I also say, you know, I tell people when I give this talk based on this, that we have this tendency to consider when we've martyred ourselves, meaning like we put off our writing for something else as a noble thing, like, well, I made time to clean out the refrigerator instead. You know, it's like, really, you just didn't write. let's be honest. Let's get honest with ourselves, you know.
Right.
And it's not to judge yourself. Please don't ever take anything I say as, you know, judge yourself harshly. It's really more just to be honest with ourselves and say, if we really want to write, then we really have to make time for that writing. And that means something else has to go.
Yeah. And for, you know, for anyone who's like me, who's doing, well, and you also, you know, doing a lot of things. I mean, I'm running programs, I'm coaching, I'm editing, I'm blogging, all that. It can be very easy to allow all of that to get in the way of writing. And, you know, and I can tell you, I've been struggling with it now for several months because I have a book proposal and that I need to finish. And what's lacking are the chapters, the sample chapters.
Yeah, exactly.
That requires writing.
Dang it.
And I tell myself I'm writing every day because I'm writing blog posts and, you know, all of that. But the fact is that that's not my book. It's different.
Well, and that's another reason why journalists love deadlines, because it makes us write. You know, we have to turn it in by X date, then we finally have to get writing.
Right. I always say deadlines are my friend because I was trained as a journalist. So
that's right.
Yes. Okay, so you mentioned deadlines. Any other way to, you know, any other tips or strategies to carve time away for, you know, for writing, to get away from these distractions and actually write?
Well, the first thing I actually have people do is have you, like, take your journal and stop and think about when you are actually at your most mentally alert for your writing every day. And the reason I have you stop and think about this is because for everyone it might actually be a counterintuitive time. Like, if you might find that it's at your lunch hour at work that you really want to write, or it might be the first thing in the morning, or it might be actually at that time of night when you start to sit down and watch TV instead. You know, so what you often find by, like, really identifying when you're the most, and it's not just alert, but maybe have that inspiration or that feeling like, ooh, I would really like to write right now, you might have something else that's filling that spot already. Now, if it's work, obviously that's hard. You can't move that around. But getting to know when you're at your most ready to write helps you to carve out things that are already taking that space. So, you know, I know for a lot of people it's after work. And in after work, we tend to unwind. And some of us have to give up that unwinding in order to write. The other important thing is to get your family on board, and in the sense that you create working hours. So you actually just make them like office hours. You carve them out. You say, I'm going to be writing in these 2 hours. You do not get to disturb me, or I'm not making dinner, or whatever it is you can get away with in your family. And you really hold to those hours. You don't answer the phone or the door when you've committed to writing. You know, and a lot of what carving out distractions means is giving something up. And instead of thinking of that as a negative, let's think of it as making time for this important thing that you need to do. But I feel like, you know, most of us probably have at least an hour a day that we spend frittering it away on something else that can go. So a lot of it's just getting honest with yourself.
Yeah, I often talk about it. You know, I mean, I'm all for reading, but there are people who say they have no time to write, but they're reading for 2 hours a day. Well, reading's great, but if you really want to write, you could cut that reading time in half.
Yeah.
Still read.
Exactly.
Right?
I think we need to remember that you can get a lot more writing done in an hour than you think, even in a half an hour. So a lot of it also is really setting, reminding yourself you don't need 5 hours to write. You know, if you, and also as a matter of habit, the more you do something, the more you become geared, your brain readies itself. So if you set a time every day that you're going to write, maybe the first 3 days are hard, but the fourth and fifth and so on, it gets a little bit easier.
Right.
You know, it's a muscle.
Right. And I love what you said about the entertainment, because that's another area that I always harp on, because you know, today we can record almost anything. There isn't a reason that you have to sit down on Thursday night to watch whatever show it is. Right?
No.
You can record it and you can watch it on the weekend as a reward. You know, say, okay, no, I'm not going to, you know, the 2 hours I normally spend in my so-called downtime every evening watching my favorite shows, I'm going to TiVo all that or record it.
Exactly.
And I will write during those 2 hours. And then on the weekend, I'll have my massive watching time.
Yeah.
Right?
And actually, I think rewarding yourself for doing work is a great technique as well.
Yeah.
When you have something to look forward to after you've done the hard work, you're more likely to do it.
Right, right. Okay, so what we're asked to do as writer takes us out of our comfort zone, and you even talked about stretching, you know, mm-hmm. finding opportunities to stretch you. So, but this, the things we do, like putting our work out into the world, contacting editors and agents and publishers and speaking and promoting, a lot of this takes us out of our comfort zone as writers.
Yeah.
So how do we do that? How do we step outside our comfort zone, and why should we do that?
Yeah. Well, the why, let's address it. It's probably obvious to most of us, but if we keep doing the same things, we're not likely to grow. You know, growth requires us to get a little bit uncomfortable. And uncomfortable is not the same thing as being miserable or face rejection. You know, sometimes you do grow from those things, but creative growth requires that we explore new territory. So it's different for everyone, but what I recommend is that people create a set of, you know, maybe every month or every week you sit down and you say, what is a realistic next step that I could take that's a little bit of a risk for me in the sense that I haven't done it before or it's new, but it's not a sabotage. So the difference between those to me is, I'll give you an example. Let's say for me, a risk might be to submit a short story to a new publication or an article. So you're facing the risk of possible rejection, but this is what writers do. Sabotage would be to, say, query an agent before your manuscript is done, or even to, you know, send something out that's never been looked at before, that you've never revised. You know, when you do something like that, where you set yourself up for a failure that leads to discouragement, which leads to the less of a likelihood that you're going to face that kind of, you know, risk again. All writers have a next step. You know, for you, the next step might just be writing another page of writing. You're just putting out a first draft. Maybe you're ready to seek an agent. Maybe you're ready to find a critique group. You know, whatever that step is, you really kind of get, again, I feel like a lot of what we're talking about today is getting honest with yourself. You know, why does this matter to me? You know, when can I do it? What can go to get out of the way? And what is my next step? I also recommend that writers sort of don't do everything in a vacuum. A lot of us are, if not introverts, where we tend to spend a lot of time on our own heads. So, you know, have a mentor or have a colleague who can reflect back to you, you know, maybe it's not such a good idea to do that yet. You know, someone you trust, not someone who's going to make you feel bad. You know, I've got several sort of writing partners. We share writing. If I need advice on something or a piece of, for her to look at something, I'll send it to her and vice versa. And she's helped me, you know, both make good decisions and help me keep me from making bad decisions by saying, are you sure about that? But if you, again, just like, you know, writing's not going to write itself, agents and editors are not going to come knocking on your door, unlikely. It's not that it never happens, but it's unlikely, especially if you're not putting your work out there. So we have to do it. And you discover, I think what's great about taking those risks is that when they pay off, you feel so good about yourself and you've, you know, kind of seen into a new corner of yourself. And that enables more success.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree. So along those same lines, I mean, some of that is, you know, is those opportunities you talked about, finding new opportunities to write and publish. And so if we're stretching ourselves in those ways, how are we going about that? How are we finding those opportunities to write and publish?
Well, here's one. I'm going to come back on my social media thing and say, here's a great place to use it for. So if you like Twitter, there are lots of hashtags that can lead you to opportunities such as seeking pitches or submission opportunities or write tips or things like that, where the actual editors of publications will put out calls to writers and say, seeking pitches. Pitches is a word that's used more often in journalism. Queries is the word used more often in fiction. I know there's a thing called PitMad on Twitter, which is about you can pitch your idea for your novel to an agent, and they'll let you know if it's good or bad. You might want to have a little bit of a thicker skin for that one, but it has led some people to get an agent right off the bat. You know, like somebody loved their idea, they sent the full query, boom, worked. Facebook has a lot of wonderful writing groups, and unfortunately, you just kind of have to search. So there's a search bar at the top of Facebook, and you can put in things like, you know, writing group or women writing, or you can even, there's one for, like locally, like Bay Area writers. You can really come up with almost as specific of search terms as you want and see what comes up and ask to join some of them. For me, like when I got started years ago, there was zoetrope.com, which still exists, but at the time it was kind of a chat room space for writers, and you could share your work for critique and critique each other. And that ended up being a tremendous resource for me because I met other writers, and then through that they would post opportunities for publishing. There's a ton of websites that that mention, you know, you can always look for editors seeking writers. It's another search you can do on Google or on Twitter. Publication seeking writers, publication opportunities. There's also a website that has a newsletter you can subscribe to called, hold on, it's leaving my head, but I think I can pull it up here. I think it's Freedom with Writing. Let me see here. Just want to make sure I'm getting this right. Freedom with Writing, or is it, Freedom with Writing. That's the name of this, and you can get it in your email inbox. But honestly, again, like I said, Google's your best friend. There's so much information out there. There really is so much information, you'd have to really be avoiding it to not find it or not look for it. But I would also say, if you're someone who goes out in the world and interacts with people, make a business card for yourself that says writer on it and has your contact information. And when you meet someone who seems like they have a need that you can fill, you give them your card. You know, be vocal. Tell people what you do. You know, make connections. Go to writing conferences. Mm-hmm. Take online writing classes. You meet people.
Right. Okay, so I have a couple more questions I just want to do quickly so we can get to the question and answer. A lot of writers quit. I mean, we always hear the same statistics, 81% of the American public wants to write a book and only 2% do. We get discouraged and we give up. So how can we avoid that discouragement so that we can actually fulfill our writing dream?
So the best metaphor I can give people for this, you know, if you've ever taken a yoga class and the person teaching yoga, they often describe having a yoga practice. And a yoga practice is like, it's a part of their life. Sometimes they do it every day. Maybe sometimes they only do it on the weekends. But rarely, I think, do those people say to themselves, well, I didn't do enough yoga this week. I didn't get my quota. So for me, I apply that to writing in the same capacity. You have a writing practice. When you treat your writing as a practice, that means that everything is part of it. That means rejections and bad writing days and, you know, quote-unquote failures, they're all just part of this larger practice that's just, you know, it might take a week, it might take 10 years to get where you're going. Because again, if you just say to yourself, I got rejected today, I suck as a writer, it's over, you know, no one's going to keep going. Another way to fight discouragement for me is I ask myself, or I sort of have this mantra in my head, anytime something happens, like where I'm rejected or, you know, the outcome isn't what I want, and I say, either go elsewhere or go deeper. And what I mean by that is either you need to take your work to another location, another publication, or you need to go deeper into the writing itself. And neither of those things is a bad option. And that, again, this is all part of, oh, well, my writing is a practice. You know, the cover of my book on persistence has a path leading up to a tree, and the tree has deep roots. And I love that sort of path tree image, because if we think of it, you know, even though it's a cliche that it's the journey, not the destination, it's really true. So a writer is always writing in one way or another, even if you're just thinking about writing, even if you're doing research for writing. Every time you send out a publication, you're doing something that is another drop in the bucket of your writing practice. So if you can treat it like that rather than I'm only a writer when I get published, when I get paid, then you will have a very different point of view, and you will be one of those people who succeeds because you stuck with it.
Right. So I love that. But as a tag on to that, yeah. I know that a lot of people feel like life gets in the way and that practice is hard to establish. So do you just have a couple last tips on how to create a lasting and productive writing practice, something that's sustainable and that we can do even, you know, I mean, life does come up, but most writers are writing no matter what.
Yeah. I think, again, if you can't create a deadline for yourself, which is great, deadlines are important, you need to get an accountability buddy, which is a person who will help you hold yourself accountable. So on Thursday, I need to see your 10 pages. You're going to turn it into me, and maybe I'll turn it in some pages to you. A person who says, how much writing did you do this week, or how's the writing going? That's one thing. You know, just like a lot of us need exercise classes to get ourselves to go, having a partner who supports you in some way. And again, there are lots of ways to make such partners. But it's also, I feel like we have to understand, too, that unless you're someone who really isn't making yourself write at all, that there is supposed to be a little bit of downtime. You know, creativity needs a little bit of fallow time. So if you're only just beating your head against, you know, if you're kind of going at it really hard all the time, you might actually be burning yourself out. So you don't want to burn yourself out. So if you have an accountability partner, you know, let yourself have downtime, deadlines, and then for the most basic function, you know, do word counts. Make yourself write 300 words. One of the things I find for myself, I have a procrastination problem, and I tell myself every time, just get started. Just write the first sentence, because if you just write one sentence, you're so much more likely to write second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth, and that works for me more times than I can count. So, again, do something rather than nothing.
Right. I tell people that because they'll tell me life gets in the way, I'm moving, I have this, my kid had a baby, you know, whatever it is. And I always I say 15 minutes. Everyone can find 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah,
set a timer, write as fast as you can, do not edit, do not research, nothing, just sit down, 15 minutes. And they always come back to me and say, I did 15 minutes the first day, and the second day, and then I did 30 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And then the fourth day, it was an hour.
Yes.
And this weekend, I did 3 hours.
Exactly.
And I'm like, yeah, all you got to do is just do it. And make you know, don't allow yourself to say, life got in the way, I didn't have time this week. We all can sit in 15 minutes.
Well, and keep in mind that if you write a page a day, in a year you'll have a book.
Right.
That's nothing. I mean, that's fast. You know, one page a day, you have a book in a year.
Right, and 300
words.
And
most of us could probably write more than a page a day if we just make ourselves do it. Or, you know, 10 pages a week. So, I say to people all the time, you know, what are your excuses? You know, oh, I know, I'm too old, I'm too young, and I have time, I have too much time, We all have excuses. It's, you know, in fact, the more excuses you have, then you need to go back to that looking inside yourself and asking yourself, like, well, why do I want to do this? You know, do I really want to do this?
Right. Great advice. Okay, so we're going to go to Q&A in just a second. So anybody who wants to ask Jordan some questions, hit *6, and that will cue you up to ask questions. So just again, hit *6, queue up your questions, and while you do that, Jordan is going to share with us, or I would like you to share with us, Jordan, how people can find and contact you and any programs you offer, anything like that you'd like to share.
Yeah, thank you. So again, you can find me at, my website is a little, there is a contact button, so I would say if you want to get in touch with me, use my email, which is JordanWriteLife@gmail.com. That's my name, JordanWriteLife@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter @JordanRosenfeld. And I actually do tweet numerous writing tips taken from my books. You can find me at jordanrosenfeld.net. My Facebook author page is Jordan E. Rosenfeld. Those are the main ways. And then the most pertinent to this group is I'm part of a six-hour online webinar for memoir writers, and it's being produced by the head of She Writes Press, Brooke Warner, and the president of the National Association for Memoir Writers, which is Linda Joy Myers. They're calling it Turn Up the Dial on Your Memoir. It takes place on April 28th, and all 6 hours are just $39 total. I'm one of the authors. I'm trying to think, Nina, how I can get this information to you. It's a long URL. It's writeyourbookin6months.com, and there's like a / Turn Up the Dial memoir event. You could probably Google Turn Up the Dial on Your Memoir and find that event. And anyone who's local in the local area, I'm teaching a book at Book Passage in Corte Madera Sunday, April 30th, an all-day workshop on point of view and character development. I forgot in the bio I sent you, Nina, I actually have a newer book out, which is called Writing the Intimate Character, and that's a book about mastering point of view and character development.
Okay, so I'm going to make
Actually, one more thing. If anyone
wants to... I'm going to make a link for that for you. That's
okay,
shorter.
Thank you. Anyone who would like to hire me for an editing disc... Sorry, my brain turned off here. For editing services, I would offer you a 25% discount for anybody who came through this webinar.
And is that nonfiction or fiction?
For the first. Either and or.
Okay, and for the memoir event, I now have a short link. You just go to ninaamir.com/Jordan, J-O-R-D-A-N. And it does have a capital J. I don't know if that matters. So ninaamir.com/Jordan for the six-hour online webinar for memoir writers.
Perfect.
And that was a great offer in terms of the editing, so thank you for offering them that. All right, so let's see here. We have a question. I don't know who this is. It just says wireless caller. Hello?
Hi. This is Carol. You mentioned a little when you were first speaking about, and I only caught kind of part of it, but about white papers, I think you said, and content writing. And I've come across that phrase. I'm kind of an oldster in all of this and not very techie. Can you just explain to me a little bit more what that actually is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, white papers are funny because depending on the industry they're for, they can be different. But in a nutshell, a white paper is generally either explaining something in a sort of succinct way, or it's trying to make a case for something. So it's maybe you would bring it to investors or you would bring it to customers. So I've been writing medical white paper. So I wrote one sort of explaining something to do with a particular area of healthcare law. Everything I write has to do with the audience's physicians. So it would be sort of technical. They can be very technical. You have to do a lot of research. But the thing is that they pay really well. Content writing is not so different from journalism. Most of the time, it's just you're writing an article about something, but there's a kind of sponsorship angle. So you might even have to mention a product or mention a product indirectly. So it's more about how to get your foot in the door, which I'm still actually working on that. I have done some, but it's competitive because it pays well. And if you're a journalist and you have those kind of skills, then you would, you know, you'd be set up at least in terms of being able to write that kind of material.
Mm-hmm. You know? So it's kind of like advertising or?
Yeah. So like, for instance, I wrote for a magazine, or I still do, called Good Magazine. And they have a bunch of sponsorship. They get money from companies who sponsor articles. And the writers come up with the topics, but they have to fall under a category. So I wrote for Progressive Insurance was a sponsor. And they like things that have to do with data. Like, data is their thing, any kind of interesting data. So I would write about, I wrote about, data pertaining to how our lives are longer these days, like we live longer, and what that means for our productivity and workforce, things like that.
Uh-huh.
And so it was still just an article. I did research, I reported, but it was, I had to meet some parameters that they were happy with, and they got to approve or disapprove content, which is editors do that, but it felt a little bit more like, because we are the ones paying this, we get to say what you get to publish. And that got a little trickier when I did some work for Arrowhead Water was the sponsor, which is also owned by Nestle. And there were some topics they did not want me to write about. So that was interesting.
Okay. Oh, all right. How do you find, how do you kind of go about finding this? They find you or?
No, you definitely have to be. I mean, what I find, I belong to several networking groups of freelance writers, which is a great resource. And they will often report either editors. Well, sometimes we'll come in and make calls for pitches, but a lot of us will share with each other. Well, I saw this call for pitches online, or I heard that this content, you know, marketing places looking for writers. Google searches, again, are a really good way to just see what's out there. You know, the more you get into the realm of freelance writing, you start to stay on top of these publications you're interested in. And then, you know, you can even subscribe to, some of them have freelance writer resources where they update you on what's going on. But it's kind of like you have to keep your fingers in the pots of these publications and follow them. A lot of publications that, like, we read that we don't know have content writing do. If you ever see a sponsored by link on a site that you read, like, say, The Daily Beast or Salon.com or something, and you see a sponsored by, that's probably content writing, content marketing, however you want to call it.
Okay.
And,
well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. My technology has changed, so I'm going to click a little button. Pam, I'm coming to you. I see you. Hopefully this is going to go there next. I think it did. Hello, Pam.
Hi. Hi, Nina.
Hi.
And hi, Jordan. Thank you. This has
Hello.
Been really fascinating. Thank you. Yeah, I just have a question about if you knew now what you knew then. No, wait. If you knew then what you know now, yeah, and you were just starting out with nonfiction writing, would you self-publish or go the traditional route just based on how, you know, how the culture is now or the industry.
With a book?
You know.
You're talking about a book-length
work?
Yeah,
nonfiction.
What I always tell people is I really recommend you exhaust the traditional publishing route first. You attempt it before you go to self-publishing because it doesn't cost you any money. I mean, not really, unless you pay for editing. It doesn't cost you any money to pursue publishers and agents.
Mm-hmm.
It costs you money to self-publish. So
good
for
point.
Me, it's the same. In a lot of cases, you can recoup that money. But you also have to remember, I think the one big caveat for any self-publishing, and I've done a lot of it, you have to become your own marketing person. You have to sell your own work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, which for some authors, they say, well, my publisher doesn't put any money into marketing anyway, so I might as well. But, you know, I just recommend that you always try the traditional route first. You'll also learn some things and get probably some feedback along the way that you can apply and use when you go decide to self-publish.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you have more control
of
self-publishing, but you also are the, it's like being the landlord versus being the, you know, by the homeowner versus the renter, right? It's all on you now.
Yeah.
So,
and that's, Pam, that's
that
something
sense.
I also often stress, and you may have heard me stress it, is that, that what people don't realize is when they decide to self-publish is that they're becoming a publisher. They're a project manager for each one of their books, and you have to manage the editors and the designers and the formatters and the, you know, all of those things, and you're putting your money on the line. Whereas if you go the traditional publishing route, yeah, you lose control. Somebody else is managing that, and it's on their timeline, not yours, but they're investing the money, and it's their risk. And while they may not do promotion, I mean, we all have to promote our books no matter how we publish, but the likelihood is your books will be in stores and there'll be at least a little bit of promotion done. And so it's helpful.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of, you know, who are you? What do you really want? And what will serve your book the best?
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
I mean, would you agree with all of that, Jordan?
Yeah, and some people are set up. They know how to market. They've got all of this stuff in place beforehand. So for them, the control and the being in control of their own work is more important to them because they know how to do it. For other people like me, I really like having a publisher behind me, I've learned.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, like
and I
short,
like having an agent as a business partner.
Yeah. I do. I did like having an agent too.
Yeah.
All good
points.
Thank
questions?
You.
Thank
yes,
you.
Yes,
yeah,
sure did. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks, lady.
Yep. Anyone else have a question for Jordan? I know we're over the hour, and I usually am willing to go till about 10 after, and I think Jordan had agreed to be here just a bit longer. So if anyone has another question, please pop it in there now. hit star 6. Jordan, while I'm waiting to see if anybody else jumps on, would you again tell them just how to find you, you know, your website and that kind of Twitter, social, all the social media stuff?
Yeah. JordanRosenfeld.net is my website, and there is a contact form there if you just lose my email. JordanWriteLife@gmail.com is my email. Facebook, I'm Jordan E. Rosenfeld, and on Twitter, @JordanRosenfeld. And again, just make sure it's Feld, F-E-L-D, not Field. That happens sometimes.
All right, we have another question. I don't know who this is. It's a 301 number. Hello?
Hello, am I on?
Yes, you are, Jacqueline.
Oh, okay, thank you. Everything has been great. It's a lot of really, really good information. I just had a couple questions. When Jordan, you said that when you switch from fiction to nonfiction, first of all, did you start writing with magazine articles or a blog, or you just went with a book or what? How did you do that?
I really started working on freelance articles for local publications. And
articles.
I had been, I would say, you know, little features where I interviewed local folks. And I did some book reviews for a local publication. And what else did I do? I didn't start blogging in the first round of bloggers, so that came later. Yeah, mostly just freelance and essays. So essays, personal essays, freelance articles, and that was about it. My book, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I was just going to ask. So you, in other words, you didn't have a particular niche or anything. You kind of wrote whatever the people wanted you to write. So that you had a you wrote over different categories then.
I did. I didn't have a niche until, in fact, now I'm actually become largely a science writer, which is funny. A lot of what I write is science related, but that happened organically. And I personally recommend that unless it's a great way for you to break in, that you become someone who can write about multiple topics. But, you know, then again, if you find, hey, I'm really getting good at this one thing and there's a lot of work for me, no harm in that.
Okay.
And the funny thing about my book, I have to say, I sold my book in 2005 before this whole concept of platform was a big idea, because none of us really had the means for platform. There was no social media at that time. So I had a really good idea. I had written for the magazine a few times, so I basically asked who the contact was for the book. And I sold a book that I now feel like today they might never have they would never let someone like me, who I was at that time with a few credentials and without a platform, sell a book. So you have to have more, you have to be more plugged in today to sell a book. You know, you have to have a web presence, a social media presence, and probably in that regard, to sell a book, you absolutely do want to have a niche of some kind.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, to echo what Jordan said, I think my first book proposal went out in 2000 or 2002, and I was surprised that and it was a nonfiction book, and I was surprised that an agent actually called me, like, not long afterwards, and commended me on all of it, the writing, the title, the proposal, all of it, and then said, but you don't have a platform. And I had researched, I mean, I had been immersed in publishing for a long time and had really thought I'd done my research on what I needed, but it was a new term. It had just, they were just starting to talk about platform. And she explained to me, well, nobody knows who you are. You need to, you know, for me to pitch you to the big New York publishers, somebody needs to know who you are. Like, a lot of people need to know who you are. And I found that even the small publisher she sent me to, who I knew about, but wasn't planning to pitch till I had to. Even that publisher, in the same thing, the publisher himself called me, was totally excited about my idea, and then didn't take me. And I'm sure it was for the same reason. And so that began my journey towards, you know, building a platform, which is, it's not a short journey to do, you know. Seth Godin talks about, you know, 3 years. I usually say once you decide you want to be a writer and publish a book, you need to start building platform because it's not an overnight thing. There are smaller publishers that care less, but the platform is just, it's become such a big deal. Wouldn't you agree, Jordan?
Oh, yeah, it does. And I've heard agents at conferences say that it's a bigger deal than I wanted to hear. You know, that they really do look at your platform, particularly for nonfiction. Fiction is a different beast, but I wanted to say, you know, I think it's another reason why becoming a freelance journalist is interesting, because it's a way you can become known. And again, in this case, it would make sense to pick, you know, a niche of some kind and build a platform for yourself that isn't just through social media. You know, if you write a lot about a particular topic and then you write a book on that topic, or say you have a book idea right now, you know, and you want to start writing some articles about that particular topic, if you can, look at it from different angles.
Okay.
And unlike Nina, I don't have a journalism degree. And, you know, as much as I wish, I did high school journalism, and I've done a lot of reading and research, you know, so I feel like I understand journalism. But you don't need to be trained with a journalism degree to be a working journalist today. You need some basic understanding, but you can do it. You could go out there and do it in a couple weeks.
Oh, that's
and there's
nice
some,
to know.
There's some, yeah, and there's some resources in the Nonfiction Writers University on it. So, you know,
go
look at that to see, you know, because I have information on querying, and I believe I have some information in there on writing articles. So take a look, and if you're missing something, contact me, because, you know, we definitely can put more information together on that topic for sure.
Yeah.
What was I going to just say? There was something Jordan said that I was going to echo. No, I can't remember what it was. Oh, about writing articles to build platform. I have been at several conferences recently where I've heard agents say that. Say, you know what, if you really don't want to be on social media, or you don't want to spend as much time doing the social media, you know, they still recommend it, but they're all saying, or several agents I've heard recently have said, go out and write articles. Become the expert on your topic by writing articles on it. You know, or on your subject matter. So this is really a viable way to build a platform.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right?
Yep. Can you still hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Did we answer all your questions, Jacqueline?
Well, I did want to ask one thing that you two mentioned at the end that I'm a little bit confused about. I understand the advice you were given about traditional publishing versus self-publishing. However, Nina, the project that we were working on when I was I'm supposed to be doing something really small. Remember when we were doing a small book for the book for the month of March?
Yes.
That was supposed to be something that, an e-book that would go up on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not talking about that. I mean, we don't need, it's not self-publishing because it's not a print book, but since it's going up on Amazon, then you don't need any type of representation or anything like that. That's not what you're saying,
right? You don't need representation, but don't discount that it's not a book. An e-book is a book. My traditionally published books have e-books. That's
a more, I mean, you can sell a lot of e-books versus paper books, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing, so we had, Jordan, just, you know, in March, I challenged them to stop, you know, basically to publish something, because everybody's, you know, so constantly working on the book and never hitting publish. And so I said, publish something short. Just write something short. It can be 5,000 words, but get it done and edited and design all that stuff, you know, and put it up on Amazon so that you can feel like you actually did it, you know,
right.
That you're up and you can say you're an author. And so it was a matter of just really taking action. And yes, so Jacqueline, those short books still, you know, up as e-books are still books, but no, you do not need representation for those. These are a way for you also to build your expertise and your platform, because hopefully in your book you're driving people back to your website to subscribe to your mailing list or to follow you on your social media sites, and that is going to build your platform as well.
Okay, I understand that.
Okay?
Yeah,
awesome. Did you want to add anything to that, Jordan?
No, I think that says it.
Awesome. Well, we are at just about a quarter after, so we're going to call this a wrap for today. I want to thank you so much, Jordan. I really loved this session because I think we covered so many things that are so important to writers. You know, really, how do you keep following through? How do you stretch yourself? How do you stay inspired? How do you get those opportunities? How do you write in, you know, we're all so creative. How do we write in so many different areas if we really want to? So I'm really grateful for you for covering so much information.
Oh, I just thank you so much for having me. You know, it's really wonderful. And you're such an inspiration, and I hope your listeners keep checking in because you've got so much to offer.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. Well, I think you are inspiring as well. And I was honored that you took the time out of your busy day to speak to the Nonfiction Writers University members. And I, as I said, I'm thrilled with the enormous amount of useful information you provided for us today. And of course, I had a great time exploring the topic, but also learning some things about you I didn't know and learning from you.
Thank you.
For those listening, all events are listed on the Nonfiction Writers University website. We're just now updating the events for the next 3 months, so please do check there regularly and get the events on your calendar. You know, the coaching events, the virtual writing sessions, events like this one today with Jordan, the educational events, and watch for the reminder emails as well. But get these things on your calendar. Again, thank you for attending. Thank you, Jordan, for offering such fabulous information. I appreciate all of you. I'm Nina Amir, the Inspiration to Creation Coach. I can't wait to speak to you again next month on May 4th at 11 a.m. Pacific Time when Janet Roberson Anderson, a branding expert, is going to speak to us about how to create an author brand in 90 days. So that's what's coming up. Thanks again to everyone for attending, and thank you, Jordan. And until next time, go out there and achieve more inspired results. Bye, everyone.